Hello, and welcome to A Writer's Journey. I'm Sarah Whitford, and my co-host is Terrence Zepke. For this episode, we're having a wild card week, which, as you know, means we're veering off our regular season schedule to feature something different, but of course, still relevant to the business of writing and publishing. Today, we have a special guest with us, and I've got to tell you, I'm really excited about it, and I know Terrence is too. Dr. Judith Briles is a multi-award-winning and best-selling author of 32 books. Her latest are Snappy, Sassy, Salty, Wise Words for Authors and Writers, and Author You, Creating and Building Your Author and Book Platforms. In May of this year, 2015, her new title, The Crowdfunding Guide for Authors and Writers, will be available. She's the founder of AuthorU.org and is also known as the Book Shepherd. Between books and speaking, she has generated in excess of $5 million in revenues and has gone from Oprah to Good Morning America, CNN, Time, People, Wall Street Journal, and so on. She's even survived the National Enquirer. Her websites are thebookshepherd.com, publishingatsea.com, and AuthorU.org. Dr. Briles, welcome to the show. We're so glad to have you with us today. I know Terrence and I are both looking forward to picking your brain about the business of being an author, but first, why don't you just briefly tell us a little bit about Author You?
Well, Author You is a nonprofit membership association, and it's really dedicated to education of the author who is up and coming, to the author who is, you know, truly emerging and publishing, to the author who has already published. But the common ingredient is that they want to be seriously successful. They're not hobbyists, I'll say authors who kind of gaze in your belly button and they're happy if they sell the typical self-published of only 100 books, which is kind of a shocking number to me. But that's who's not in the group. It's people who really understand you got to be committed. You're going to put your time and energy and, yes, you know, money somehow, whether it's my own or I crowdfund it or where I get it, but I am going forward with. And what Author You does is they do a variety of events where the mothership is in Denver, Colorado, but we do remote activities from webinars to teleconferences to a variety of things to keep our members engaged across the country. And then once a year, we have a huge event in May, a three-day event called the Author You Extravaganza, where I bring in all the big players, the gurus, whether they're marketing, social media, whatever it is. And we have a huge exhibit where the printers come in, the designers, people who do copy editing, virtual assistants, all that. It's all here in 3 days. So we feed your brain, and we also feed your belly. We actually include food here, too.
Okay, well, I was just getting educated a little bit about you before the show, Dr. Briles. I was unfamiliar with you until Terrence told me about you, and I think it's great. I'm so glad to know you're out there. And I was watching some of your little videos and saw that you have some podcasts. Is it right that you've been involved in the past with traditional publishing and before moving to independent?
Exactly. I mean, of the 32 books now, 18 were with New York. I started with New York. So I like to say, Sarah, that I'm a recovered, but I'm still a New York snob. I mean, my expectations is that, are, that books have to look and feel like they came out in New York. So I don't want to see a project look like a DIY.
I gotcha.
Yeah. Well, if I can jump in here, Sarah and I did our first show of this season, and this season's about publishing, Judith. And I was talking about one of the options for indie publishers. And by the way, I'm traditionally published, and Sarah just had her first novel that's independently published. And so we did a show, and we talked about some of the options. And one of them I mentioned was a book shepherd. And I'll be honest with you, Sarah was a little skeptical when I was talking about the options because she's very technically proficient. So she doesn't need help with anything. So she doesn't understand there's so many others.
I need help with some things, Terrence. Don't say that.
But, you know, it's true that so many people, you know, it's kind of like a wedding planner. That's what I like in a book shepherd, too, is like a wedding planner. So maybe you could tell everyone how that works and how that would benefit.
I've never thought of myself as a wedding planner. But, you know, let me just say this, that, and coming back to those who are more experienced, or published with a traditional format, you are living in la-la land if you think that if you sell your book to a traditional publisher that you don't have to do anything else but deliver the book. Mm-hmm. The reality is, in today's market, you're going to do almost everything else. The only thing they're going to do is do minimal editing now. They will make it available for distribution for a couple of weeks, and if your book doesn't go, you're in big doo-doo. Uh-huh. And they will lay it out and, you know, cover design and all that. Other than that, you are expected to do the marketing. You are expected
absolutely
to listening. Yeah. So having a coach, which is a book shepherd, some of them are really good at coaching. Some of them are really just project managers, and where they will move your book out to the different components to bring it together. That because of, for me, because of my experience with the traditional side, that I really was brought up. I mean, my first book came out over 30 years ago. And I have to say, you know, I was a kept author. I was really taken care of. From being flown first class to always having personal escorts when they had me out traveling to full-blown media tour. I mean, I really was taken care of. That's not the way it is today.
Yeah.
So I bring that to the party when I work with my clients as a book shepherd, where I actually do content editing. I mean, as a writer myself, that it is extraordinarily difficult for me to not keep my hands out of a manuscript and to try to tighten it a little bit, even before it moves on to the regular editor. I will do that. The second side of that is then I will bring in the other people. I am hugely involved in the interior design, how the visuals need to look, so it's engaging, so when that book is opened up, that reader will fall in. The last thing I want to see is line after line after line after line after line after text. The only place that belongs and is in a fiction book, but too many nonfiction books come out that way, and they've got to be engaging. There's got to be white space. There's got to be some visuals. There's got to be some imaging. There's just got to be so much more for today's book. And so I bring that to the party, and so I work closely with the interior designer. I always write the back cover copy for all our books that we work with because I'm so marketing oriented, and it is just really critical to understand this whole thing of keywords and hooking people so the search engines finding it right and bringing that to the party and understanding that you write with headlines on that back cover because that's where the real sale of the book happens, and it's just enormously powerful to have it done correctly versus just blah, blah. And then
so people can get as much help or as little help as they need, right?
There's levels. You're exactly right. There's different levels. So what you want to do in looking at someone who is a book shepherd, are they just strictly a manager and they'll bring it in and, yeah, we'll check it off. This is done, this is done, this is done. Or are they going to really get in a coaching where I come in on the coaching side and really say, you know what, this doesn't work. We need to fix this. And know how to fix it, which is also critical. They better know how to fix it. And I think most book shepherds are not marketing oriented. They're, as I said, in the project management, and then they move it, and then they decide, you know, how are we going to print it? Is it going to be this is a print on demand? Are we doing offset printing? Do they have the contacts to get the bids in and to be able to evaluate the differences between the two and recommend what you do? So that's, you know, what most of them, you know, will come in and do and bring it about, and then the author is on their own. If you want other things, then you're going to have to come back, and whether it's virtual assistants. I think one of the big issues most authors deal with is they want to be left alone, and they just want to write their book.
That's true.
Because the belief is that if the book, it's that's all they need to do. They'll find you. And that's just utter nonsense. So what I like to do is, okay, so let's start putting your game plan together. What's our strategy? And what's your platform for both the book and for you? Where are you going with this? And what do we want to build on? And that's what I think a book shepherd should be absolutely instrumental in involving so they get a whole package. I get it that the writing is the overwhelm. It's exhausting. But the truth is, writing for a successful book is only 10%. It's what you do when the book's in hand.
I'm so thankful for, you know, in the acknowledgments of the book I just released a couple of weeks ago, I thanked Terrence. Terrence has been a longtime friend of mine. And one of the things I thanked her for was her encouragement and support, of course, but also her reality checks, because she has given me no illusions about what it means to be an author and how important the marketing side is and how writing is just exactly like you say. It's a huge part, but at the same time, time-wise, it's just one small part of what you have to do to make it happen.
Yeah, it's minuscule. And there's really, you know, critical timelines that looking for. I mean, you really should be thinking marketing as soon as you start writing. And there's two, I think that we want to relate to our listeners here, is that they need to get very quickly, is that who their reader is. Mm-hmm. Because most of them will say, well, who's your book for? Oh, it's for everybody. gag me. It is not for everybody. The more you niche yourself, the bigger your market will become. And that when you can look over the top of your laptop and visualize immediately who that reader is. Is it male or female? Are they married or single? Or maybe it doesn't matter. Do they smoke or drink? Maybe it doesn't matter. Are they party animals? Maybe it doesn't matter. But, you know, who are they? So they have a persona, which will make your writing so much easier because you're writing to them. And you're able to connect in doing that. Knowing who your market is from the very get-go will make the pain so much less. The second part is they are miserable at knowing how to pitch their book. They cannot say in 15 seconds, this is what my book is about. Mm-hmm. And the way they need to think about that is if you look at any description, a trailer for a movie, they can describe that in one or two sentences max. That's what you have to do.
I've heard it's actually great to come up with your pitch before you start writing in earnest. I mean, you might come up with an idea for a book, but to fine-tune that pitch before you start writing to make sure you stay on task.
Yeah, absolutely. Help. You write it out, you post it so you can visually see it and you can be noodled with it, and it will change. There's no question it'll change. All books change in process. I've never known one that started from, I just finished a book last week that's at layout right now. And it's called The Crowdfunding Guide for Authors and Writers. And I thought I was done last weekend. And then another thing dropped in saying, you know what I need to do? I need to write a whole section on timelines for crowdfunding starting 3 months to a year out before you initiate it, 1 month to 3 months, 0 day to 1 month, and then what you do during the crowdfunding campaign and what you do after the crowd. So I had to write a whole new section. I hadn't planned on it, but absolutely it made it much more solid.
But Judith, let me ask you here. I've been in this business a long time like you, and things I've seen a lot of changes too. I'm very good with the marketing. You're very good with marketing, but the newest thing now out there, social media. Not so good at that.
Well,
what social media have you found best for building your author platform, and what advice would you give us for better using social media?
So Terrence, I'm going to tell you, get over it.
That's what I've been telling her.
No.
So Sarah and I are echoing, get over it. Social media is the town hall for all marketing now. And each one are going to be different. And if you talked to me 3 years ago, here's what I would have said to you about social media. No frickin' way. And I didn't say frickin', but so, but now I'm up to my eyeballs. And let me also redefine the platform. A lot of people say, oh, it's your social media. That is BS. Your platform is your vision. It's your passion and it's your commitment. The commitment is time, energy, and money. When you have all three of those, then the people can come find you. And it's not going to work unless you're guiding your writing, the marketing you do that has a vision. Where do you see it going? It's like one of my books, I always knew it was going to be on Oprah. I always knew. I didn't see it in People magazine, but by God, it got 4 pages. I didn't see that, but I saw that it was instrumental. I saw that it was a pioneering breakthrough work, and I saw that it would piss off a lot of people. It did all those things, right? So with that said, that I had that vision, and then I had the drive behind it, my passion. This is my book on women in sabotage, and it was called Woman to Woman, Why Women Undermine Other Women. And that it went from everything from you know, Oprah to major serious stuff on CNN. It went from the Wall Street Journal to, my God, I survived the National Enquirer. It was all over the place. And so, and the passion that drove it is I went through this horrendous embezzlement that cost me $1 million. I mean, I was homeless. And that, so I had the passion to survive and eventually thrive again. And then I put in the commitment to do it, and put it together. I mean, I even had, Gloria Steinem over. We had dinner one night. She's talking me out of doing it. Do not publish this book. Do not write this book, Judith. And I said, but Gloria, Ms. Magazine is going under because of this behavior. But I know, but don't write it. Because you'll see, you'll give them, meaning the men, mm-hmm. more ammunition to use against us. Okay, so I ignored Gloria. But that, so, you know, I had those components. And when you're writing, you've got to have that to build the platform. So now integrating that with social media, I'm a Twitter girl. So I like Twitter. And I've got
Twitter. I love Twitter.
All right. So I've got two accounts, My Book Shepherd. Everyone follow that. My Book Shepherd. And that I actually push out a lot. I do very extensive podcasting, but I do posters. I do 2 to 3 different posters every day that go up in that feed. There's over 35,000 people there. There, I've got another 25,000 over on Author U. And so, you know, that's where I probably go. Facebook is a pain in the tush to me.
Yes. Finally, someone agrees with me. You
know, Facebook is a gag for me. I put it out there, you know, but I don't pay any attention to it. And then Google Plus, still trying to figure out Google Plus. I've got a community there, the Author U community. Do join it, everybody. But by real, I'll tell you where I really am hanging here. And neither one of you told me what your book's about, but that the LinkedIn group on Author U on LinkedIn has over 9,200 members, and I'm very active on that and communicating and what's going on and commenting in those areas. So that's where I play. Now, if I was writing for young adults, I'd be hanging out on Tumblr. Because that's where the kids are. That's where that, and you, so you have to figure out, okay, where's my group hang out? And that's where I'm going to start appearing and doing that. And then I have a couple of active blogs that I throw out in that area. So I think you have to find, number one, what's your forte? It sounds like we all like Twitter because it's snappy, snappy, sassy, and salty. You know, and you can move things quickly, and that's kind of my energy level. And I write in short phrases. You know,
So how much time do you spend on social media, like a day or a week? What would you say is your average?
Oh, it's a great question, and it's a lot. I actually have calendar to do at least an hour every morning, early.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I mean, that's the way it works, Terrence.
You see me dying here.
it's really committed. But let me tell you, you have to engage something like a Hootsuite, which I use, mm-hmm. where I can position and take care of a whole week's posting. I can go away for 2 weeks and have all my social media done and never look at it.
I have gotten Terrence set up with that. I've gotten, because I'm also her website developer. So that's what I started doing with her years ago. That's how we met. But I've got her set up with that, as well as using Revive Old Post plugins to help, you know,
keep
generating fresh tweets of you know, recycling content from her site online. And so there's so many great tools out there.
There's wonderful, wonderful tools, and repurposing, one of my favorite words, or I like the redefining is another great word. but that you bring those along and then you push those and you redo it. And he wrote a blog 3 years ago, for God's sakes. No one has seen it. Repurpose it. Give it a new front end to it and get it out again. And so there's things that you can do very quickly. I do 5 blogs a week for these two sites. So, you know, that will take time, and I'll dedicate an hour to bringing those together. And sometimes when I have to write something totally raw, it's going to take more time. But that's part of your branding, and it's part of your platform, and that really is what you have to do. So the other side of it is, since that, Sarah, you're a right hand for Terrence, is that either you have that right hand, you know who it is, or you get a virtual assistant who is social media savvy, and you turn it over to them.
Well, tell us more about virtual assistants, because Sarah mentioned that to me the other week, and I really don't know much about how that.
Well, there is, and I have actually two, all right, and that I have a full-time, actually one who works full-time for me, and does a variety of things. She helps develop the posters that we put out, so she's gotten quite adept at Canva and PicMonkey and using Photoshop. And I have over 250 quotations I actually wrote for one of my books, Snappy, Sassy, Salty, Wise Words for Authors and Writers. And that, so we've turned them all into posters. And I do that. One of my other little tricks I do is I love weird days. So I do a poster every day for whatever the weird holiday is for the day. And those get posted on all my social media. And Nancy takes care of all that. I write up the copy, and I don't have to think, you know, I proof. But she goes, finds the images to use, or we develop them off of my own stock that I have, and she takes care of that. She will drop in and check over responses, and this is where I think a VA could be very helpful to you, is that any comments that come in from LinkedIn, she always checks that out and say, you have a message from someone, how do you want to respond? And I will do a quick check on Skype, and she will take that out and deal with it, so I don't even have to go on. In those areas. So that I don't have to deal with. She will go in and she will look at all any mentions or retweets, and she will thank all those people for doing that for me. I don't have to respond to any of that. So that's where your energy suck can come from.
Yeah, I'm liking the sound of this.
All right, so see, I don't have to deal with any of that. And, you know, I'm still someone, I have to tell you that, you know, I don't work 40 hours a week. I work closer to 80 hours a week.
Right.
And so I it's not possible to work 120 hours a week. So I have that going on, and those people, take those over. But you have to define, for your virtual assistant, you have to find, first of all, figure out what is it it's consuming your day or that you need to do. Secondly, you have to identify immediately what you hate. What you hate. And that's the first thing that you will assign over.
I know what mine is.
And it's really important to find someone who understands these different programs that are out there.
So where do you find these people? Just Google or what?
Well, there's a total association, and that I know in Author U, we've got a couple of people who do virtual assistants, and that this is what their living is. And, you know, they do quite well. They do quite well.
So if you go to authoru.org, you can find some more information about that? Is that?
Yeah. Okay. Under associate members. But that this is what that they do.
Yeah.
And they come up with that. So they're out there, and you start asking who do you use and you can recommend. Now, one person who I wanted I wanted half of her time, she couldn't give it to me. So she forced me to go out. I mean, do I still get her time? I have at least 5 hours a week of her time, because I love the way she thinks and works, and I can say, Kelly, I need this right away, and bang, I know what's going to happen that day. And that she really forced me to look around and find another, and I had to go through a few. To find what was the right fit, because I wanted them to be articulate, If you need someone to clean up your writing, that's that you have to kind of, it's almost like a job description. Mm-hmm. You got to figure out what skills that you need into play. If you want them to do social media posting, do they think like you? Do they understand your work? For both of you who are authors, they need to read your books. They need to understand and get into your head so they can respond and see things. Until, you know, and you're going to have to stay on top of it so you have that trust level building up, and you won't have to worry about that.
Okay, so why don't you tell us, Judith, what resource do you think is most valuable for authors going into this, you know, independent publishing? What do you think has been the most
valuable? Oh God, we can get into the seven deadly sins, but the to going into it is they have to understand that their words do stink. And they need to have an editor. And we have three rounds of editing that we do with our books. One could be the content editing. One will be the copy editing. And then what we do after a book is done, we do a cold eye edit. That after it's formally laid out, we give it to another person who's never seen it. And they will go through it and read it line to line like a consumer would. And I'll be damned, the backwards quotes they find, the missing period, all of a sudden the line was drawn. They find it. So you have to do editing. The next thing is they have to get is that publishing is a business, and they need to start learning about it. And they need to also understand that there are a lot of sharks out here, and they're nasty. And that there's a lot of people out here who have said they are publishers, and they are not publishers at all. They are paid operations that will love you as long as your credit card lasts.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about subsidy publishing, right?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
I'm very tough on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the predators are unbelievable. And I have no problem naming names for people to stay away from. You just have to recognize that there's a lot of people out here who will tell you your manuscript is just wonderful, mm-hmm. and it needs gross help. So understand that. They're not a publisher. What you're doing is paying them to lay out or print or fill in the blank. And the reality is you can do all that yourself. You can. These people are out here that actually do that. You can engage that and be in control. Mm-hmm. The reason why I went into publishing years ago, because I was really kind of a happy camper with New York, because I didn't know any better. And the second side of that is that I had a client who I was speaking for who asked me to negotiate with my publisher to get a discount because they wanted to get a few books. And, you know, to me, a few is a few. And I had just taken back rights to that book, and basically there were only 60 copies left, and I had them. And so I said, surely I can handle their few. Well, they wanted 1,000. That propelled me into having a discussion with the plant in the corner of my office, and we decided, by God, we're going to learn this. And we went out because I wanted to rewrite the book. I found the layout people, turned out to be the layout person who did one of my books with Josie Bass, freelanced, lived here in Colorado, and she laid out my book. So I had my layout person who knew publishing. I didn't have to train her. That's what she did. I found a cover designer. That's what he did. The only thing I made a mistake on is I didn't know anything about printing. I was stupid. I was ignorant. And it took me a while to figure out all the printing. That's why the Book Shepherd comes in.
Yeah. You know, there's such a huge learning curve because you're jumping into the publishing end of things, and, you know, there is so much to learn. And it is hard work. A lot of people think that the hard work was writing the book, and sadly...
Oh, no. That was easy.
I'm
sorry to tell you that.
Yeah.
Enjoy it. It's kind of like being pregnant. Yeah. you think that was the hard part, the morning.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
And I think Sarah can tell you, she just finished her first book here, and I told her all along, trying to ground her, I said that, you know, here comes the hard part, Sarah. You know, selling the book, and so she probably has some things she'd like to pick your brain about. since she's at that stage.
Yeah, Sarah, what's the title of your book?
My book is called The Smuggler's Gambit. It's historical fiction set in 1765 on the coast of North Carolina, which is where I live, and it's the story of a 17-year-old boy who, upon running afoul of the law, gets forced into an apprenticeship and finds himself right in the middle of a smuggling war. And he finds himself in some dangerous situations, and there's intrigue and betrayal and all kinds of great things, and I've been getting so much good feedback on this book since it came out. I have, one of my blind spots is, and Terrence, well, she picks on me about this, but one of my blind spots is the fact that I've been involved with magazine publishing for over a decade now. And so the printing industry I'm very familiar with. I've done layout, I've done all that. And so I take for granted the fact that not everyone knows how to do all of that. And in my case, I'm also the editor of a monthly magazine. But with my novel, I did, thank the Lord, have the sense to hire a copy editor for my novel. There was no way I was going to trust my own eyes to my own writing.
Oh, well, that's the smartest thing you can do. But, yeah. Just two things you've told me really quickly. You've got this magazine background, so you understand the visual display of even with fiction. I mean, our fiction books now, Sarah, that I would never do lay out a fiction book line after line. Our opening of every chapter has an image on it. That's something that maybe an image that we pulled and we ghost into the from the cover. So it's integrated in doing it. I will pull when I'm reading through and looking at a book. If I find a juicy line that I just want to chew over, I will bring that line back up and use it as an opening, as a tease to lead it in.
That's a great idea.
And that's the way that's the way I handle a lot of fiction and going it in. So it's visually more attractive and sets you apart because there are really steps on how people buy a book, and I will tell you this, that the last thing that they do is the price is the last thing they pay attention to. It is the cover, it is the title, and it, the series goes on down in. So the fact that you've got, this publishing background, even though it's magazine, which is different from books, but books are evolving into layouts that are visually attractive to that. And I know I was a columnist for the business journals for 10 years. And one of the things that I learned to love, which was totally alien, was the beauty of a one-sentence paragraph. What I learned to love was the beauty of a one-word punchy sentence. And when you start learning to do that kind of stuff, you enliven your writing for the reader. The other thing I have to tell all of our people who are writing is, for God's sake, stay awake from political correctness. It makes your writing boring. And if you're not willing to be a little controversial at times, and step out and call how you feel and all that, you're going to get into, you're going to become blasé. And that's not what you want to do. You want to have your voice be powerful for where you're going.
That's all great advice. I have a question. I wanted to ask you about this. I saw that you have this fabulous podcast, which I'm going to be, I'm sure, devouring. But there was an episode I noticed you have about Ingram Spark. And my book is with both Create Space and Ingram Spark. I went ahead and set both up, from the very get-go. But one thing that I've been nervous about that I would love to get your input on as a brand new independent author is the returns option. Because I know how critical it is for your book to be, available for returns if you want to get it into traditional bookstores, of course, unless you're doing consignment with local stores. But what would you advise?
All right, let me talk about this kind of thing. If your objective is to get into a bookstore and you're not doing an offset printing run and going after it, that the only thing I would be looking at is Ingram Spark. Uh-huh. Bookstores hate Amazon. Uh-huh. And let's just be very blunt. Uh-huh. They hate it. And also the quality of Create Space is not as good as Ingram Spark. From the printing, the printing is done through Lightning Source. It is not as good quality. And you need to, as we said a little bit earlier, get over it about return. Returns are returns. And you have to really decide how you're going to sell your book. 95% of my books were never sold in a bookstore. Uh-huh. I was out speaking and I was talking and I was positioning and people just wanted to take me home and with them. And that's how those were sold. What you have, all of our listeners need to really be tuned into. If you say you want to be in a bookstore, because the times have changed. Number one, the real estate to get into a bookstore is very expensive and very exclusive, and it's difficult. Number two, to get into a bookstore, you have like a two-week window, if you're even accepted, to make your mark. So that means you have to work your tush off to drive buyers there. Are you going to do that? And if you're not, you need to do a reality check. So I would be marking, it's returnable. Because you know what? They're not gonna order your book if it's not. Period. It's over.
Well, I know what you mean. The only thing that I have been nervous about was just how many returns are we potentially looking at? I mean, is it gonna send me to the poorhouse just, dealing
well,
with
you gotta look at your cost. I don't know what your book sells for, I don't know what your margins are, but this is the business side.
Oh yes, yes.
Okay. So this is the business side that you have to really closely look at. Mm-hmm. But that I've had national distribution. I think here's why Ingram Spark is superior to Amazon to create space is because, number one, if you do Ingram Spark, you've got the Ingram catalog, so any bookstore can go, oh, yeah, I can order this. Mm-hmm. Two, you open up to Europe, Australia, and all the other channels immediately. Mm-hmm. Immediately. So they can download it from there. And the reality is if they're going to order it, Sarah, it's going to be one or two books. It's not going to be a whole bunch.
Okay.
But they're not going to be, and I'll also tell you, if they go back, they're probably not going to be resellable because the shipping back and forth is just painful to the body of a book.
Okay.
That goes on, and it's again, how are you going to move your game plan of moving people out?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really good information.
I think it's important to mention, too, Sarah, if you don't adequately promote your book, it's sitting on a shelf. It's not selling.
Right.
If you've managed to get it into the bookstore, mm-hmm. Then, your work is only partly done.
Mm-hmm. you
have, and I'm just, and pay attention to what I said. You've got about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You have got to drive people there. Now, one of the assets of Ingram Spark is that if you're doing book signings, for example, mm-hmm. And they're going around. Here's what I would position myself to do is that you could say to a bookstore that, let's say you're there and they've got 20 books or whatever, that if say 14 sold, I would be in the position that say, you know what, I'll buy all of them and walk away from them so they don't go back.
Okay.
So let's talk here, Judith. What was your biggest mistake during your time that you've been independently publishing? What was your biggest aha moment that you'd be willing to share with all of us?
From independently publishing, well, the very first, having the wrong printers, and not understanding the POD model, because they never called it that back in 2000. But that the POD versus the offset and understanding the difference and the cost. That would be that. Otherwise, I really don't have any mistakes with independent. I've had multiple printings. I get it. I knew to move it, but I was moving them outside the traditional. What I did, the other mistake is that I was involved with some of the national and the going back and forth and not really understanding all the amazing charges that a distributor could charge you, the back and forth. So what Sarah's talking about, she's worried about the returns. You're dealing with a national distributor going back and forth. They could, Baker and Taylor could order some, Ingram could order some, XYZ bookstore, and all of a sudden they ordered them out, and you think, hot damn, I got sales. Mm-hmm. And then they don't move, so they get turned back. So you get charged the shipping going back, you get charged a restocking fee, they could be damaged, and then they go out again. Pretty soon you're in the hole.
Oh.
And not understanding that or paying attention to it or getting the numbers can put you in the red pronto.
And, it is hard to understand. I've seen royalty statements from my publisher, and it'll have where Ingram has ordered 100 books, mm-hmm. and then you'll see 2 weeks later they've returned, 100 books. And then they've turned around and ordered them again two weeks later. And okay. It's like, what in the heck?
Okay, so let me tell you what's happening there. There's a game they play, because when they order books, and I think that's just extraordinarily unethical, but here's what happens, is they have maybe a 45-day window to pay for them. So if they haven't moved, if there's not confirmed sales, they will maybe on the 43rd day, they will return them all. Whatever.
Oh, gracious. Left. Mm-hmm.
And then what they do is they initiate a new order.
Uh-huh.
So you have wear and tear on your books, but you don't have any money coming in. And actually, money's going out because you're paying the back and forth, the restocking and redoing that again. Baker and Taylor is notorious for that.
Really, for me, I don't feel a big compulsion to have my book in bookstores around the country. I locally want to, because I'm in a tourist area, and of course the sorts of things that I'm writing about in my novel are going to captivate tourists to the area. And you know, as far as being involved with, you know, local festivals and events and things of that nature,
but you can show up there, mm-hmm. Sarah. So what you want to do is, I would be befriending all of our listeners. You need to find out the indie bound bookstores that are members of the Indie Bound unit and the independents, because they often have no problem ordering directly from the publisher. Also, there is another group called Partners Publishing, which is a very reasonable, if they take on a book. And Sarah, they may be interested in your book.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Spiegel is the contact person there, Partners Publishing, and they're based in Michigan. And they will pitch your book to BNN. But if you're a regional base, they can focus on directly that kind of thing.
Okay, that's good information. Well, I think this has been a fantastic conversation today. We're going to have all kinds of, you know, great info that we're going to put in the show notes. And hopefully, Dr. Briles, you'll send us some links for some of these things that you've mentioned. I have your website links, of course. I wanted to thank you for joining us today. And if people want to find you, of course, they can find you at authoru.org and thebookshepherd.com and publishingatsea.com.
Yeah.
And on Twitter and all over the internet, right?
Yeah, and we want to let our listeners know that the Author U Extravaganza is May 7th through 9th.
Okay.
And that's a huge...
We're going to put that on our website, so, and we'll do a link to that for you, Judith, and then they can find out more, because I think there's some really big names.
There's huge names. And also, you want to make sure that they use the code... capital A, capital U, and then 2015, AU 2015, and it'll give them a $100 discount.
Good, okay.
At that, but it's if they want to be seriously successful, if they just want to goof off, don't come.
Uh-huh.
If you want to be really seriously successful, schmooze with authors who are successful. Have one-on-one time with John Kramer, to sit down with Joan Stewart, to really get book buzz insight from Sandra Beckwith.
All great names.
You know, you need to be there.
Now, they can attend whatever sessions, right? Just like a writer's conference, they come to whatever sessions they're most interested in? Or
it's all general sessions.
Okay.
Every general session. And then we have over 25 exhibitors.
Okay.
You know, those printers we're talking about, mm-hmm. those book designers we're talking about, those virtual assistants, they're all there.
And I saw you even have people, photographers there that will take author photos to present you in the most flattering way for your book cover.
Oh, let me tell you, Ashley Bratton is fabulous, and she does a package for authors for $250 that you'll have, you know, like 55 minutes with her. She will move you around in different areas and get some wonderful casuals that look so spectacular that you can use, whether it's blogs, articles, book covers, fill in the blank. But you get the CD, and she'll edit a little bit, and then she'll send you the CD, and you're off and running. And you can use it anywhere. There's no limitations, you know, no royalties. It's yours to running.
Right.
And she's going to, you know, we're starting to fill her slots. And we also have the Author Shark Tank, which is you pay to go into the tank, but we had one person walk away with $10,000 worth of goodies last year.
Oh, wow.
What happens in the tank?
Well, you pitch your book.
You pitch your book, and then you tell the sharks what you want, what you need. I need help with this.
Oh, just like Shark Tank on TV. Okay, because yeah. I haven't seen that show, but now I click. It's the reality show. It's the just like that. Okay, I got it.
But so, you know,
Love it.
So she walked away with a cover. She walked away with the entire design. She walked away with incredible help. Social media, she got a social media package out of it. She got all kinds of things for this one book. She even got a round trip ticket to Germany for the author.
Wow. All right, well, before we run out of time, share with everybody just one thing, if you could tell everybody, one piece of advice to give somebody like Sarah that's just on the cusp of this adventure, if you will, what would be your...
The most important thing for Sarah would be to make sure that she gets now she's got the book together, so now it's the marketing game plan. So really clearly understand who her ideal reader is, and then find out where they are hanging out, and that's where you go. Don't diddle around and waste time where people are pulling you in different directions. The more myopic you can be, the better it is. It's much easier to be the whale in the pond than the sardine in the sea. So that's really what I would advise you do. Find the top influencers who are writing in this genre, or whether they're in magazine writing or book writing, or telling stories about it. Wherever they are, follow them. Uh-huh. Make comments on them. Get them behind you so they can do shout-outs. And the other thing that's very important for you, Sarah, as a brand new newbie author, is that I want you to put the cover of your book on a slip of paper. I want you to get a shortener, maybe you can customize it, to the link to your Amazon page. Uh-huh. Everyone who buys that book, you will ask them to go up and put a link on the shorter link, a review for you. Once you get, the magic number on Amazon's reviews is 110. Once you get 110 reviews, Amazon starts shouting out for you.
Oh, wow.
Now, what are you talking about? I don't understand what you're saying of getting links to.
You can go to Bitly or TinyURL, and you can put in the god-awful long link to your page on Amazon. It'll squeeze it down, and it says, would you like to customize it? And you say, oh, well, yes, I do. And instead of it saying Bitly and go blah, 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 it will say bit.ly/, and it might say, what's the name of your book,
Sarah? The Smuggler's Gambit.
And it could just say Smugglers. Or something. So what you're doing is trying to make it easy for people can remember it. So what it does then, because now it's customized, that if people just write in the bit.ly/smugglers, for example, then it will, and don't get the apostrophe out of there.
Right.
Okay, and then it will just go to your Amazon page, and then they can put in a review on it. So when I say the shout out for the Amazon, what it is that you, Amazon, I've had it happen. I have a client who has a book called Shot Down. They did it twice. It would cost $3,000 or $4,000 to have Amazon send out a solo email. If you like military and war type history books, you might, here's a book we recommend.
Oh yes, that's priceless. Just advertising. That's a priceless thing. So
yeah. Okay, that's how you do it.
Well, you have given us so much great information today, and I really thank you for taking the time out to be with us on this, and I know our listeners are going to enjoy this. I'm just excited to get it out there. And
Well, you too should come to the extravaganza. It sounds like you have a lot to learn.
Oh, I would love to come to the extravaganza, but Terrence can tell you I'm a single mom. I work from home full time, and I'm trying to write and everything else, so I don't think I'll be taking any trips anytime real soon, but I wish I could. I think it sounds fantastic.
All right. Well, thank you for being with me. And everyone, the extravaganza, do come and see me and give me a call, because I'll figure out how to get you here.
That's right. And as I said, we're going to put all kinds of great info in the show notes. So listeners, if you'd like to find those, or if you want to hear more of A Writer's Journey, you can find past episodes at my website, sarahwhitford.com, or Terrence's website, terrencezepke.com. That's terrencezepke.com, or subscribe via iTunes. And to connect with Dr. Judith Briles, visit her at authoru.org or thebookshepherd.com. And I just thank you for joining us. Until next time, happy writing.